Okay, everybody. The little ones have vacated the premises, so we'll get started. Genesis chapter 44 tonight. Genesis 44. We've nearly got almost the exact same amount of chapters left on Wednesday nights as we do on Sunday mornings. I would assume we'll probably finish Genesis before we finish John. Just guessing. We'll probably be in chapter 17 for a couple of weeks when we get there in John. But anyway, Genesis 44, you'll remember we left off last week at the end of 43 that the brothers had come back. They brought Benjamin with them. Joseph had told his head steward to bring everyone in, and he had fed all of them, and they had enjoyed some time together, but he still had not revealed to them that he was their brother, that he was Joseph. And so that we pick up in 44, immediately on the heels of the conclusion of that meal and that time together, where again, like I said, they still didn't know that this is Joseph as the second in command of all of Egypt. So with that said, I'm going to read probably the first six verses, and then we'll just see how far we get tonight. Let me pray before we get started. Father God, we thank you for this evening. You've given to us this chance to, this opportunity to come together and read your word together, to study your word together, to fellowship with one another. Lord, this is a precious thing and a precious time, and I pray that none of us take it for granted that your people gather together and enjoy this time together, even before we feast on your word. Lord, we're able to enjoy a meal together and just spend some time one-on-one. God, this is what a church should look like, and I'm grateful for these that you have brought to this place. Lord, I pray that you would be with us tonight as we open your word, as we feast upon your word, that you would open our hearts and our minds, and that we would just get infinite pleasure from knowing that this is your word. This is actual, factual, literal history as we read it, and it's your God-ordained truth. It's in Christ's name I pray. Amen. Let's see here. Let's start in verse 1. Then he commanded his house steward. Remember, this is immediately after the meal. He commanded his house steward, saying, "Fill the men's sacks with food, as much as they can carry, and put each man's money in the mouth of his sack. Now put my cup, the silver cup, in the mouth of the sack of the youngest, and his money for the grain." And he did as Joseph had told him. As the morning light broke, the men were sent away, they with their donkeys. They had just gone out of the city and were not far off when Joseph said to his house steward, "Arise, pursue the men. You shall overtake them and say to them, 'Why have you repaid evil for good? Is not this the one from which my Lord drinks, and which he indeed uses to interpret omens? You have done evil in doing this.'" So he overtook them and spoke these words to them. They should have stopped at verse 5. So clearly the text tells us this: the initial events. The chief steward went and did this the night before, because it says when day broke the next day. So after the meal that night is whenever he put their money, filled their bags with the grain that they came for, put their money back in there just like he had done before. But this time there's another twist to it. He takes this silver cup. Actually, in the original language and in this setting, it may have been much more than just a little drinking cup, because he talks about where he divines omens from. So it may have been a much larger thing. It could be as big as a punch bowl almost, because in the ancient world, they would do this type of sorcery, magic, whatever you want to call it, where they would read the liquids, and they would pour like water and then put oil on top of it and watch how it moved, and that would tell how whatever event or whatever thing they were asking for help on would do. Possibly part of what Joseph was doing, although we know God had granted him this glorious gift, but perhaps that's something he did in their sight to make them think he was playing the game. Anyway, it probably wasn't just a little small cup. It was something probably pretty substantial. I say all that. Let's back up to verse 1 and 2. So after the feast, like I said, he orders the steward to set another trap for him and to place that cup in the sack. Now, I touched on this cup Clearly, it's a very specific cup, my cup. It is silver, so it'll be valuable for multiple reasons. And it was specifically known that it was Joseph's cup. There would be no doubt about that. Probably couldn't really put a value on that. It reminds us of a story, again, connected to Jacob and Rachel, of all people. Does it not? Back in Genesis 31, whenever she took the things out of her father's house, these idols and things, remember, and hid them, and they were under the saddle of the camel that she hid them. That's all the way back in Genesis 31, 32. So, and again, the fact that it's silver. There's another part that connects this, if not the connection of Rachel, in Genesis 37. We've spoken much about the gifts that the brothers brought to Joseph being the same kind of things that these travelers, these Midianites, were bringing to Egypt as well. Remember that? We talked about the myrrh and the aloe and all these things. The exact same things. Y'all remember in Genesis 37, 28, these words? Then some Midianite traders passed by, so they pulled him up, Joseph, lifted Joseph out of the pit, and sold Joseph to the Ishmaelites. So his brother sold him to the Ishmaelites. We all remember that. For 20 shekels of silver. So once again, the parallels are amazing here. Of what they were taking, what he was sold for, and then now the silver cup comes back into play that he brings back against his brothers.
Possibly.
Well, I mean, if it was specific it probably would have been worth the monetary value, perhaps, based on weight. Like we said last week, it's all based on weight. But more than that, it would be worth much more than that because of whose it was and who used it. It's just like us going to sell something, right? It may be worth something to you, brother, but it might be worth much more to me because of these other criteria that we can put up on it. So, verses 3 through 5, morning broke. The men were sent away, they with their donkeys. They'd just gone out of the city, were not far off. So twice it tells us, they're not far out of town, they're not far off. So they haven't made it very far, and Joseph says, go get them. Go run them down. Now this guy, this chief house steward, he's the one that filled all the sacks up. He knew exactly what he was going to find when he got there. Joseph tells him exactly what to say. Pursue the men, you shall overtake them, and say to them, why have you repaid evil for good? Is this not the one from which my Lord drinks, which he indeed uses to interpret opens? You have done evil in doing this. He said, we know what you're going to find because you stuffed the bags. Here's exactly what you're going to say to them. Interesting that he literally tells him exactly what to say to them. So this plan starts to get played out, interrogating the brothers. What about this expression, repay evil for good? It's only found here, this expression, and in the book of Psalms, a couple of places. Kind of an ironic reversal. What would Joseph say at the end? Genesis 50, 20. Most of us are familiar with the verse, even if we don't know the name or the number. What will Joseph say when the whole plan at the very end of Genesis is finally revealed? He will say this to them. Genesis 50, 20. As for you, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good in order to do what has happened on this day to keep many people alive. It's almost the exact opposite of what Joseph will say to them at the end of Genesis. So, again, let's keep going. So he overtook them, verse 6, and spoke these words to them. So he spoke literally what Joseph told him. And they said to him, so the brother speaking back to the servant, why does my Lord speak such things as these? Far be it from your servants to do such a thing. Behold, the money which we found in the mouths of our sacks we have brought back to you from the land of Canaan. How then could we steal silver or gold from your Lord's house? With whomever of your servants it is found, let him die, and we also will be my Lord's slaves. That again takes us back to that encounter with Rachel. Remember, Jacob said, nobody's stolen anything. Whoever you find it from, they'll be put to death. There's that other parallel once again. They'd been pretty firmly entrenched in the thought that nobody stole anything to make a comment like that, right? I mean, you're not going to say that if you think somebody there's hiding something. So they're stunned by it. What about a self-imposed death penalty is found also in Scripture for selling an object? And that's back again in Genesis 31:32. So, and this was not beyond the realm of the law in that area in that period of time for stealing something. There could be the death penalty imposed. Verse 10. So he said, that this is the chief steward speaking again, the chief servant, house steward. Now let it also be according to your words. He with whom it is found shall be my slave, but the rest of you shall be innocent. What changes right there? What does this house servant say compared to what they say? Let it be, only one will be punished. He didn't say we'll kill him, does he? Be a slave. Well, why that shift in his language? He knows exactly what's going on. Well, not exactly, but he knows a big part of what's going on. He knows what he's going to find, and he knows who he's going to find it with, because he was the one that stuffed the bags. And he also knows that Joseph doesn't want him dead. What's that? That's the ultimate plan, and we don't know how much House Stewart knew, but the ultimate plan was to get Jacob there. So he said the rest of you will be free from guilt. Now, why does he say a slave to me? This guy's just a slave himself. He's a house steward. He's speaking on behalf as a representative of who he is representing. He's speaking on behalf of Joseph at that point. And had he really been brought into slavery, he would have probably been directly working for this guy. So let's keep going. Then they hurried. Each man brought his sack down to the ground, and each man opened his sack. They fully expected nothing to be that be wrong. Let me stop there for a minute. What happened last time they went and they came back with their sacks? Their money was back in there when they stopped the feed. I don't know about y'all, but after that happened the first time, I might check before I left. That's a good point. We made that point at the end of last week, didn't we? That it said they drank till they were drunk, or they got drunk together also. Their mind, their faculties may have been a little bit wobbly that morning as well. But I still think I would have checked in the sack. But again, this is God's providence at work, because that's not what was supposed to happen and play out. Well, unless they didn't put as much grain in it.
Yeah, I guess.
You could balance that out, kind of like, putting rocks in the jar or something. So they got the bags down. So he searched, verse 12. So he searched. Chief Stewart's beginning to search. Beginning with the oldest and ending with the youngest. And the cup was found in Benjamin's sack. Go ahead.
It was probably buried down in it.
Yeah, it wasn't an immediate thing. There's also this, I don't know what the right word is, but this buildup you could sense, right? I mean, he goes through 10 of them before they get, and in the middle of all them 10, the money's still there too. That's not even mentioned here again. He put the money back in there too. All 10 of these brothers, it's like this build-up, this massive build-up of what's about to happen. I don't know if that's, of course, God's hands on this, of course. Is the servant doing a little bit of, on his own terms, building this thing up to this point too? I don't know. We don't have all the details of what conversation it was had between Joseph and this chief steward, this house steward either. Then they, the brothers, tore their clothes. Each man loaded his donkey and returned to the city. Now, they've been told they can go. What does the initial response tell you, though? They tore their clothes. We don't see a lot of people tearing their clothes these days over something like this, right? I mean, you see it a lot in the Old Testament, even in the New Testament, too. What does it mean that they tore their clothes?
Anguish.
Anguish, despair, fill in the blank. I mean, it was...
Job did that, too.
But even when we look back, whenever they came back, when the brothers came back the first time, and had the money and said that they want Benjamin to come. This is chapter 37. Jacob's response was this. So Jacob tore his clothes and put sackcloth on his loins and mourned for his son's many days. He was in mourning before they ever sent Benjamin there. So these boys are now thinking, and remember he told them, this will bring me down to Sheol. This will bring gray upon my hair. This will kill me if they do something to Benjamin.
Those brothers are getting a taste.
What did we say a couple of weeks ago about this, you reap what you sow, and, yeah, I mean, but they're not going to leave without him. They load their donkey and return to the city. So they come back. So what are they hoping to accomplish? I mean, what does that accomplish for them to come back to the city? We're about to see. Judah's about to make a case. Remember, Judah had assumed leadership position because of the indiscretions of his older brothers. Of course, we know it that way from a human standpoint. From a God standpoint, we know Judah was to take the head because of who comes out of that lineage.
Yeah.
That's the messianic line through Judah.
Yeah.
So, verse 14. Then Judah and his brothers came to Joseph's house, and he was still there, so they fell to the ground before him. And Joseph said to them, what is this deed that you have done? Do you not know that such a man as I can indeed interpret omens? Now this is interesting again here. This is the third time that they've fallen at his feet. Well, the first time it didn't say they were prostrated. This time it doesn't say they did either. But they fell at his feet again. This is the third time I can interpret omens. Well, this is a literal fulfillment of the dream prophecies again, and he says it right on the heels of that. And again, Judah, what did Judah tell his dad when they left to go back?
If anything happened to
Benjamin, Dad, I'll protect him. He's in my care. I'll take care of him. Anything happens. Actually, that was what the other brother said. Judah bore that responsibility on himself to take care of Benjamin, and Benjamin's the one that got caught. Quote-unquote caught. So he takes the lead again. What is this deed you have done? Verse 16. So Judah said, what can we say to my Lord? What can we speak? How can we justify ourselves? God has found out the iniquity of your servants. Behold, we are my Lord's slaves, both we and the one in whose possession the cup has been found. Now let me ask you a question here. Why in the world does Judah say the Lord has found us out? The rest of them hadn't done anything wrong here, have they?
He's feeling guilt from a long time ago.
Absolutely. They don't even know this is Joseph. They knew that 20 years earlier, they had done this dastardly deed to their brother Joseph, that their father had suffered this whole time. At least some of them would have had a amount of guilt about what they had done, and that God punishes the workers of iniquity. And so they're realizing, even though they may not have done this, and they can't figure out how this happened, they're being punished. Remember, a while back, the first time they came, they said, God's letting this happen to us, or God is doing this to us. So they recognized that God is the ultimate judge and deliverer of justice, and he just uses human instruments to do that. We are my Lord's slaves. He just handed over their life.
Kind of odd, he says God has come down.
Yeah.
You don't have to find out.
No, he's... Yeah, that's a good point, John. I mean, he's omnipotent. He knows all. He didn't learn. He didn't, you know. I think it has
20 years to find out.
What's that?
Taking 20 years
Yeah. God didn't know what was going on for 20 years or something. I think that's not language we use a lot anymore, but I think of that more in terms of being found, like the punishment part's here now. Like we're finally fixing to find the punishment of this in terms of, that's a way I think that word used to be used in older times, but we've been found out. But it's interesting that he verbalizes it like that to this guy too. Verse 17, but he, Joseph, said, far be it from me to do this. The man in whose possession the cup has been found, he shall be my slave. But as for you, go in peace to your father. Now, what's Joseph doing here? The rest of y'all are free. Who is the one of this whole group that has done Joseph no ill? The one he's going to keep. Now, we know he's not going to submit him to slavery or sell him or anything like that. Why send the other ones back, though? This is his chance to get them back, is it not? Could go back and face Pop. How are these guys going to respond? Is there going to be any guilt now? Or are they going to wait 20 more years before they find guilt about what happened to Benjamin? But ultimately, he wants to see his dad again. It's a big part of this. We're going to see that play itself out too. And to get Benjamin away from the other ones. There's multi-layers to why this is happening like this. First and foremost, God's providence. But all these other things in order from the human standpoint are there as well. Three or four or five, half a dozen things we could think of, really. It's his 100% biological brother. Like we said, they were closer in age. They were treated differently by dad. Yeah. It's. Now, I found this little application piece that I pulled out from a commentary I looked at. Just to see if there's anybody, because a lot of this is just fairly narrative with some details there we can look back on these events that are connected, the silver and some of these other things. Found this interesting, though. Let me read this to you right quick. Judah is discerning to recognize that God uses retributive irony to punish sinners. One sins will normally find one out, and they will serve to punish the sinner. God often works that way. Even at the cross, there's the sins of retributive irony. There's Satan and his followers attempt to destroy the promised one by hanging him on a cross. But it's the very death of the Messiah on the cross that brings about the eternal defeat of Satan and his gang. And of course, all of that unfolding according to whatever your hand and your purpose predestined to occurred, Acts 4:28, Satan and all his thugs meant the cross for evil, but God meant it for good. But the cross is also an event of restorative irony. That is, through the death of the Messiah, life was brought to his people. Through his suffering, his people are made whole and restored to a proper relationship with the Creator. So just another connection of the gospel story and how it connects to this story. And the fact that these brothers, we know the verses, he talks about a brother laying down his life for a brother and how honorable that is, but how much more amazing it is that the King of Glory would die for us. Let's go on. I'm wrestling my voice as it is. I'm worried it's probably going to be gone when we're done, but I think the Lord might get us a little bit further. Pick up verse 18. Now, let me preface this. From 18 to, I think, verse 30 or 32, a lot of this is just repeating what we already know. Repeating what's already happened. So just keep that in mind as we read through this. Then Judah came near to him and said, "Oh, my Lord, may your servant please speak a word in my Lord's ear. Do not be angry with your servant, for you are equal to Pharaoh." So Judah asked for a private audience with Joseph. So again, Judah is assuming leadership role here, not just in title only, but he's actually trying to be a leader. Negotiate, take some ownership, those are redeeming qualities, not redeeming in the sense of pain, because they haven't come completely clean with what they did, have they? They haven't said, well, here's what we did, just God has found us out. They still want to kind of hold on to some of that, right? So then they're not fully pouring out their guilt, kind of like we can do sometimes whenever we want to repent or whatever, something we've done wrong, of, you know, we give a little bit, God, I'm sorry I did this, but, you know, let's not talk about everything else that I did.
They didn't want Daddy to find out.
They didn't want Dad to find out.
Also, didn't you tell Dad
that he would give his life? Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, that was the other brother. Judah said that he would give his life, that he would be a servant or slave the rest of his days, offered up his boys, all that kind of stuff. Judah basically, yeah, I'd give everything if something happens to him. So, yeah, I mean, I'm trying to throw flowers at Judah, but there's also that piece of trying to get Benjamin back safe because of everything he promised he'd do, too. My Lord asked his servants, saying, have you a father or a brother? And we said to my Lord, though they're speaking about Joseph, we have an old father and a little child of his old age. Now his brother is dead, so he alone is left of his mother. And his father loves him. So again, it's not missed on the other brothers on how much more these two were loved, right? We talked about that a couple of weeks ago also. So, again, this is a side conversation, a one-on-one conversation, apparently. Then you said to your servants, bring him down to me that I may set my eyes on him. So y'all remember that. I mean, this is something we already knew. This is a story we already read, right? This is the first trip to Egypt. Bring him down to me that I may set my eyes on him. And we said to my Lord, so Judah saying us, the brothers, the boy cannot leave his father. If he should leave his father would die. You said to your servants, however, if the youngest brother does not come down with you, you will not see my face again. I'm just thinking out loud here. At any point, I can imagine Judah wanting to get this out there, wanting to say all this, wanting to remind Joseph of this. But at any point, the second guy in command of the strongest empire in the world at the time could have just shut it down. I don't have to hear any of this. He didn't have to entertain a one-on-one audience, first of all. He could have shut it down at any point in this conversation. And Judah had to have been thinking that in the back of his mind, I would like to think.
There's an interpreter there, too.
There's that, too. Mm-hmm. Thus it happened, then we went up to your servant, my father, verse 24, and we told him the words of my Lord, and our father said, go back, buy us a little food. So he's skipping a few things. Yeah, we kind of, a week or two ago, we brought that. It was probably a...
Because he could speak both languages, obviously.
Yeah.
Got them and talked to them.
Yeah, and he probably learned it from Joseph. Mm-hmm. Joseph had probably taught him Hebrew. I mean, the closest advisor he had, he would want to be able to speak Hebrew. And just think, if they were in some kind of private meetings or something somewhere, and he wanted to share something with the steward that he didn't want everybody else to hear, he could speak to him in Hebrew. So that would have been a lot of practical reasons to teach him Hebrew. And there have been travelers that would be coming down often, but that's a trick that's been used in hierarchical structures for as long as there's been hierarchical structures of, if we can speak a private language and nobody else can understand.
That servant must have really wondered, why am I interpreting for you if you already know what they're saying?
Yeah.
There had to
be in, yeah, but there's also, yeah, the internal conflict, there's a lot of internal things that are going on here that we're speculative about, might be able to pull little nuggets of this, probably this and this, but we're largely being speculative because, yeah, I mean, all this, why send them off and go get them again? I mean, why do any of this stuff? But then again, we don't know what private conversations were had.
Not that he knew, because when he heard the response back on the road, he had the right response, and Joseph couldn't have prompted him for that one, you know, back a few verses. Does
yeah,
that make sense?
Yeah.
So I bet he kind of knows.
Yeah, I think there's more that he knew. It's not, we say that should give us no squirminess on what we're reading, because God's given to us what we need. No doubt. He didn't give us all the details all the time. Where were we? We got sidetracked a little bit here. 25? Yeah, because between verse 24, he says, thus it happened that we went up to your servant, my father. We told him the words of my Lord, and our father said, go back, buy us a little food. That's not exactly how it happened, is it? And what happened? They ran out. But before that, what does he say about sending Benjamin to begin with? No, no, absolutely not. It's not going to happen. Benjamin's not going because this is my son. Remember, he's saying that to all 10 other boys. Now, this is my son. I'm not sending my son. We're all, I mean, you know, we're all your son too, Dad. No, this is my son. And they ran out of food.
They kept saying his father, not our father, too. So
they were both waiting. Yeah, that relationship. And these boys were a lot older than Benjamin, too. They had families of their own at this point. I mean, they had their own sons that were old enough to give up to Dad. I mean, all this stuff has been going on. But so a lot happened. You know, he's just kind of paring it down, 24 and 25. We run out of food. Verse 26, but we said, we cannot go down. If our youngest brother is with us, then we will go down. For we cannot see the man's face if our youngest brother is not with us. So now he gets into some a little personal stuff. Verse 27. And your servant, my father, talking of Jacob, said to us, you know that my wife bore me two sons. And the one went out from me, and I said, surely he is torn to pieces, and I have not seen him since. He's withholding a lot of details here, isn't he? A lot of details. But he is getting a little more personal. What else is this doing for Joseph, though? Now, I don't think Joseph's acting in a vindictive way here.
He didn't know the story.
He didn't know what they told Dad. He also didn't know that his dad has really been mourning him this for two decades. He may have assumed it, but...
It's getting personal.
You're it's getting very personal. You know, Dad has still been this upset for 20 years. Verse 29. If you take this one from me and harm befalls him, you'll bring my gray hair down to Sheol and evil. Now, we talked about that a week or two ago, what he's talking about there, that it would kill him. He's saying it would just kill me. And I would die unhappy, a broken man, is what he tells the boys. Keep calling them boys. They're grown men at this point. Verse 30. So now, when I come to your servant, my father, and the boy is not with us, and his life is bound up in this boy's life, in the boy's life, so it be that when he sees that the boy is not with us, he will die. Thus your servants will bring the gray hair of your servant, our father, down to Sheol in sorrow. Is he trying to pull on some kind of emotional strings here? I think there's that for sure. He doesn't know this is Joseph. So do you want my dad to die? Because if you do this, my dad's going to die. Now, why in the world would the second guy right underneath Pharaoh give a flip about the death of some old man back in Canaan?
It's the only argument he had, though.
That's a good point, Diane. It's really the only leg he's got to stand on. And the fact that Joseph had shown some interest in the younger boy and the father. Now, I don't know that Judah was thinking that far ahead, but he had made a comment, what about the father? Is the father still alive? Remember, he asked him that. Is your father still alive?
There's a kind of truism among lawyers if you don't have facts, appeal to your emotions.
If you don't, right. Yes, y'all didn't hear what Brother Roy said. He said, I almost hesitate to say a truism among lawyers, but out of respect for you, brother, I'll say that anyway. That in the absence of facts, appeal to emotion. We do that too, don't we? I mean, you don't have to be a lawyer to do that. You're trying to get your way, especially. Verse 32. For your servant became a guarantee for the boy to my father, saying, if I do not bring him back to you, then I shall bear the sin before my father all my days. What is he saying there? Remember, that's what he promised him. Promised Jacob before he left. He's saying, the same expression used of Joseph's supposed death back in Genesis 42:13, but in other words, at Benjamin's death, Jacob would also die. Yeah. They're bound together. It's the same kind of language. It's the idiomatic language of loving another person as much as you love yourself. Now, I don't want to get too far off the beaten path here. You've probably known of people, perhaps this has happened in your own life, where I think of famous people, one famous couple in particular, because we know them. You know them. You may know people personally too, though. I've known people personally too that when one of the spouses dies, especially.
This has been going on for 2 or 3 times. Do you not think that these brothers at some point don't recognize Joseph, that he is their brother?
Well, you know, they complete.
Teenager.
Yeah, I mean, the Egyptians would do all this ornate jewelry, and they thought a lot of the physical.
It never crossed their mind. It would never.
No, and he purposely didn't speak Hebrew.
Right. And for him to be in that position, I mean, how did this guy that we sold to these.
Jewish nose just didn't get in the way, basically.
Yeah, I think he was in such regalia and dressed up. And, I mean, let's be honest about it. God's plan and purpose was for them not to know that it was him yet.
Yeah.
I mean, God could have supernaturally hidden their ability to even understand who he was, too.
Also, they're always on the ground with their face down.
They were down. I mean, yeah, there's a whole lot of things at play. Yeah. And if they were not standing out in a well-lit area because they didn't have any kind of artificial lighting, I mean, there's a whole lot of different things, but really, it boils down to, because, yeah, you think these things. You read these stories, you're like, well, how could they not?
They weren't hungover anymore by this time,
though. No, they. Yeah.
From 17 years old to full adult, you've changed quite a bit.
You can change quite a bit. Yeah. You can change quite a bit.
And they didn't watch you growing older, so.
Yeah. And he was, like I said, he would have been completely shaved, no hair on his head, probably at all. Where were we?
My niece dyed her hair and I didn't recognize her.
Brother Charles said his niece dyed her hair and he didn't recognize her anymore. Won't you dye yours before next week and we'll see what you. For your servant became a guarantee for the boy of the father, if I do not bring him back, then I'll take his place. That I'll bear the sin for my father all my days. Verse 33. So now, please let your servant remain instead of the boy as a slave to my lord. Let the boy go up with his brothers. For how shall I go to my father if the boy is not with me, lest I see the evil that would overtake my father? So that kind of tells you right there what Judah's idea was the whole time. Is I'll put my life in exchange for Benjamin's life. What he's willing to do.
I mean, he has no options.
No, he has no options. There's no way he could go home. He promised his dad. There's some accountability in this of him stepping up and saying, I'm going to do what I said I was going to do. I mean, there also shows in this that there is, we've talked about this, the strained relationship here, but there is love for these boys, for their father. They could have took the stuff and went wherever. Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, anyway, what are the thoughts there? Reuben was the one who'd offered his two sons in Genesis 42:37. Yeah. Jude offered himself. He offered up himself. Now, y'all remember this part? Judah looks pretty positive here. There's an irony in this, though. Remember, they threw Joseph in the pit. They're trying to decide what to do with him. This is back in Genesis 37. Remember? What are we going to do? Genesis 37, 26 and 27. And Judah said to his brothers, "What gain is it that we kill our brother and cover up his blood?" Well, let's not kill him. Positive. Verse 27. "Come and let us sell him to the Ishmaelites and not lay our hands on him, for he is our brother, our own flesh," and his brothers listened. It was Judah's idea to sell him to the Ishmaelites. What did he think would happen to him sold to the Ishmaelites? He'd go down to Egypt. What was going to happen to Joseph? Become a slave.
Yeah. But otherwise, what would they do? Leave him in the pit? I mean,
they were trying to figure it out. I mean, yeah, he came.
Much
yeah. But he seems to think, I mean, the very comment that he makes, "What gain is it that we kill our brother and cover up his blood?" That they had some bloodlust.
Sure, some of them did, yeah.
Some of them did have bloodlust. Some of them had acted out that bloodlust in a couple of other occasions, if you remember. When they told everybody to get circumcised and they go in there and kill all of them after they told them to do that. You remember that story? Again, the comment I made earlier, it's noble to sacrifice yourself for a brother, for a king, for anybody else, but for the king of the universe to come down and sacrifice himself, now that's something altogether different. Any other thoughts on this text? Pretty straightforward.
Time, we're going to get done pretty quick.
What's that?
Doing a chapter every week.
Well, we don't do that every week. It was a long time in Genesis before we got to text where we would get through a whole chapter. Y'all might remember, if you were here when we started Genesis, it took us 7 weeks to get through the first 7 days of creation. We spent a night on every single day of creation. So we are moving a little faster now.
I'm just astounded at the way God works. His providence